Vic Lewis and Last Minute Bossa Nova. Jazz Lineup is next. Join me at 5 next Saturday for the Gateshead edition of the programme. But for now, from me, Alan Shipton, goodbye.
In this week's essay, Furniture, a personal history of movable objects. Novelist Ian Sansom explores cupboards.
A cupboard has always been a good place to keep a secret.
Beds.
I believe that the best part of the day is that time spent lying in bed.
Tables.
One wonders if Marx had his own trusty desk in mind when writing in Capital about the peculiar, almost magical qualities of the table.
And chairs.
Chairs always imply people.
And starting on Monday night, the wardrobe.
And the wardrobe door opens onto a world where we can become both our true and our imagined selves.
The essay. Every weeknight at 10:45 here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, looking ahead to 7:15 this evening, in Opera on Three, we have a performance of Puccini's La Fanciulla del West. Minnie will be sung by Nina Stemmer and Dick Johnson by Jonas Kaufmann. Franz Welser Moerst conducts the Vienna State Opera Chorus and Orchestra, and you can hear that starting at 7:15 this evening. Well, it's now just after 6 o'clock and time for a special edition of Jazz Lineup, presented this week by Julian Joseph.
Hello, welcome to Jazz Lineup, coming from the 10th Jazz on a Winter's Weekend Festival at the Royal Clifton Hotel in Southport. Alex Garnett's Bunch of Fives is a quintet featuring some of the finest musicians playing jazz in Britain and internationally. Garnett himself is a tenor man of authority with great respect for the tradition, and sharing the tenor saxophone duties is American Tim Armacost. His history is just as varied and illustrious, and was forged with distinction on the New York jazz scene and many other scenes worldwide. In the piano chair is the knowledgeable and creative Liam Noble, with another American in entrepreneur and impresario, Michael Janish, on the bass. Completing the group on drums is the gifted and ubiquitous James Madron. Let's go straight to the music. To perform Pastures Old and New, please welcome Alex Garnett's Bunch of Fives.
Thank you. Thank you. We're having so much fun. The time runs away with you. We're going to do a little thing now that's going to feature our piano player. And this is something that I dedicate to my son. My little son, Charlie, kind of contributed to this in some way with the melody line. So see if you can dig this. Thank you.
Alex Garnett's Bunch of Fives Quintet. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3, coming to you from this year's Southport's Jazz on a Winter's Weekend Festival with me, Julian Joseph. Very shortly, we're going to hear more music. Before we do, I'm pleased to say band leader Alex Garnett joins me and Tim Armacost. It seems obvious that there's a strong bond between the two of you, and you talked, Alex, about putting together a group of people who you enjoy to play with, which I guess is a very good decision. But in particular, choosing to have somebody else who plays the exact same instrument with you, and he's no slouch, let's admit it. You know, it shows a great character on your part.
Actually, it's kind of a funny thing, because I do know a lot of guys on the scene here and you know, evolved with and been influenced by a lot of musicians just by being in the British jazz scene and, you know, going through my own experiences. But Tim's actually somebody that was introduced to me by means of a cassette tape about 25 years ago, or probably more than that, introduced to me by a friend of mine called Julian Wagan, who's an avid jazz fan and a great tenor saxophone player and has a pretty keen ear for you know, certain styles of playing. And he met me and then said, oh, hey, Al, I like your playing, but wait till you hear this guy. And gave me a little tape of this guy playing. And I thought, oh, I need to start getting my business together. And that's kind of how I got influenced and inspired by that particular moment in time. And then I happened to be in New York and met Tim. So we got on a personal level as well. And it's taken us 20 years to kind of get it together, even though we've kind of been aware of each other's playing and we've had completely different tangents as far as the musical experience is concerned. We've been interested. We kind of come from the same source in a way. So now we're kind of colliding, which is a lot of fun.
Tim, if I could turn to you. You're here in Southport playing Jazz on a Winter's Weekend Festival. It's their 10th year. How does this festival compare with others that you've played at? And I'm sure they're numerous.
For me, it's not so much about comparing it to the others, it's about feeling the energy in the room. And for us to walk up onto the stage today and have a full house arrayed in front of us and people really excited to hear the music, you know, I don't need to think about anything else except that. What a wonderful thing, you know? Get on a plane, right? Right? This business is hard enough as it is, and you get on a plane and come to a place and you feel like you're wanted. That's a very nice thing. So thank you all for coming tonight.
Nicely said. Now, you've grown up in several different countries, and you've played jazz, I'm sure, everywhere. Mm-hmm. How was that, being someone really interested in jazz? Your mother was a classical musician, or is a classical musician?
Mm-hmm. It's been an amazing ride for me. Your question put me in mind of a moment when I went to college. I took my junior year in Japan, and I arrived before the actual school year started. I did an intensive Japanese program, and I went to the campus, you know, student hang. And I couldn't really speak any Japanese yet, but they could understand Stella by Starlight, you know? So I said, Stella by Starlight, like that, and they said, yeah, or hi, they said. And we started playing, and it was. We could speak a language together that, you know, there was no other language that we could speak together, but that one we could immediately begin to communicate with, which was fantastic. And that was a particularly strong one for me, because it was pretty intense to come up against the wall of Japanese. I expected to understand something when I got there, having studied for 3 years, but it was like I couldn't understand a thing. That, you know, it took 6 months before that started to happen. But so I've had that experience all over the world now, and it's a wonderful, I like to say it's not the best way to make a living, but it's a really nice way to spend your life.
Well, let's come to Bunch of Fives. Alex, what have you got coming up next?
This next tune is a bit of a kind of jaunty bebop-influenced tune, which we hope you enjoy, called Illusions of Grandma.
Thank you.
Alex Garnett's quintet, and that was Holmes, and that featured Tim Armacost on tenor saxophone, Liam Noble on the piano, Michael Janish on bass, James Madron on the drums, and Alex Garnett on the tenor saxophone. And for all the titles played on tonight's show, please check out the playlist via the Radio 3 website. Well, that's it for tonight's show. A big thanks to Alex Garnett and his bunch of fives. Remember, there's plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3. Check out Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson on Monday nights at 11. And Jazz Lineup will be back at 6 o'clock next Saturday. But for now, from all of us here at Southport's Jazz on a Winter's Weekend Festival, till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
Was Jazz Lineup, recorded at Southport's Jazz on a Winter's Weekend Festival, featuring the music of Alex Garnett's Bunches of Fives Quintet. The programme was presented by Julian Joseph and produced in Glasgow by Lindsay Pell and Sushil K. Dade. And there's more information on Jazz Lineup on the programme page of the Radio 3 website. And there's more jazz at midnight tonight, when Geoffrey Smith will be looking at the career of Hezekiah Stuff Smith, the jazz violinist. Midnight tonight here on Radio 3. Well, the time now is 16 minutes past seven, and time for Opera on 3, a performance recorded last October at the Vienna State Opera and introduced by Andrew McGregor.
Take two opera stars, Nina Stemmer and Jonas Kaufmann, and corral them in the American Wild West, a saloon bar in a mining town where there's drinking, gambling, fighting, and a stranger rides into town and steals the sheriff's girl, precipitating a lynching. Now, I bet the images flashing through your head now are straight from a Hollywood Western. This is not your typical Italian opera. Welcome to the world of Puccini's La Fanciulla del West, The Girl of the Golden West. And those Hollywood clichés are something this Vienna State Opera production, conducted by its music director Franz Welser-Mürst, tackles head-on by deliberately avoiding them. After all, the opera predates most of the Wild West movies whose images seem inescapable to us now, and to many other productions of the opera. Alexandra Wilson is with me, musicologist and cultural historian at Oxford Brookes University, and author of The Puccini Problem, Opera, Nationalism and Modernity. Alexandra, La Fanciulla's not just set in the American Gold Rush of 1849, but written for America.
Yeah, that's right. So it was first performed at the New York Met in 1910. And Puccini had come across the play that formed the basis for the opera on a previous visit to the States, a play by David Belasco. And Puccini's English wasn't very good at all, to say the least, but he was always very struck by wonderful visual scenarios. And in particular, there was a projection of the Wild West on a screen at the beginning, a sort of early filmic projection at the beginning of this play, and that really seized his imagination. But yes, the idea of an Italian opera set in America seems to us quite strange. Although there had been earlier Italian operas with American settings, but for this period, it's really a novelty.
But for that audience, at the Metropolitan Opera in New York, this is recent history.
Yes, it is, although the far west of the country would have seemed still quite alien
remote,
to
yeah.
an audience from New York. It would have still had that exoticism for them that it would have for an Italian audience, which is quite interesting. And Puccini himself never went out to California. So he was picking up all this information secondhand and sort of recycling clichés, if you like.
But he said in his letters he felt he knew it well enough, didn't he? He felt he understood the West.
Yes, but all from Belasco, from speaking to Belasco and from reading about it. And I think that there had been various sort of Wild West-style shows that had toured around Italy in the 1890s, kind of circus-type cabaret shows that he might have had access to, but it's certainly not authentic in the sense that we would use the word.
And what about the musical language? Because, well, it isn't like any other Puccini opera, is it, musically?
No, it's decisively more modern than anything he'd done before. And he drew on quite a lot of foreign influences, foreign to him. So he'd been listening to Pelléas and Mélisande, and he was attacked for using Debussyisms in Fanciulla. And there's a lot of music that's kind of verging on not really being tonal.
And you get that right from the start, don't you? Those strange, stretched harmonies of the very opening of the opera. And there are fewer set-piece arias as well. You know, you're starved of hits.
in this one.
You are, and I think that accounts for the rather mixed reception that it had when it was first performed, particularly in Italy, because there was that expectation that you would have set piece arias and that the voice would be prioritised, whereas really in this opera it's the orchestra, if you like, that's almost the leading figure, or we've got the two principals and the orchestra coming third, really, if you like. It's such a lot of emphasis is on the orchestration, and very often the melody is in the orchestra.